Terry Savage, the syndicated columnist at terrysavage.com. Terry, welcome back.
Good to be in the studio with you, and welcome back you.
That's right. John Hansen filled in for me for a week and a half. He always does a great job, but I missed you. And our listeners love you. So when I travel with these people, Brendan, I do for 9 or 10 days, sharing buses and hotels, they get a chance to tell us what they think, and they love them some Terry Savage out there.
Oh, I love it. Maybe one of those trips I'll go along with you.
I think that
would... Find a place. Ask me in advance. Sounds like fun.
We will need a bigger bus. You were just chattering a little bit here about consumer confidence.
So it's very weird. Very weird. We had this huge and unexpected and significant drop in consumer confidence yesterday. And both the current, the survey says, well, how do you feel now? And what do you think about the future? And across the line, consumers expressed a lot of concern. Well, let's not go with the numbers. Let's just say, boy, that was a surprise to many, especially because, well, let's take the stock market at all-time highs.
Four days in a row.
Yeah, down a teeny bit today. But the stock market, the Dow at 42,000, who would have ever thought that? You've got unemployment is not so high. I mean, gee, you remember terrible recessions when unemployment got to double digits, the misery index. It's, you know, it's a little over 4%. Interest rates are coming down. The Fed is, you know, not only cut rates, but it says the trend is down. All of a sudden, we've seen the latest numbers, people running in to refinance their mortgages or buy homes. So that should increase it. So why would consumer confidence be so low? There's some other worrisome statistics. And I'm not personally not quite sure what to make of it. But you're going into the fall holiday shopping season. So the real question is this lack of consumer confidence going to translate into a spending slowdown, or have we changed things and have we created the end of the world is nigh, so shop till you drop, you might as well have it now, travel, shop. It could be a huge burst of consumer spending this year, and then we see what happens in the new year. And it's, you're going to say, is it political? I think this is not about candidate A or B. I think it's about you can't go anywhere without hearing people say, here's what's wrong with the economy, and here's how I'm going to fix it, here's how I'm going to fix it. You get the sense, geez, if all these smart people think something's really wrong, the poor are getting poorer, or the taxes aren't being paid, or whatever, you start to pay attention. I think it would make you nervous if you weren't a follower of finances.
I can see why it would make people nervous. The Consumer Confidence Index that you're talking about, is that a telephone survey?
No, that's a conference board survey, and it's been going on.
My question is who generates this and from whom? Who is giving their confidence level?
The conference board, we could actually look that up and give you the specifics, but they've been doing this for 45, 50 years. They have a broad survey measure, and it's comparable.
Of Americans.
Of Americans. Oh, it's Americans.
Okay,
it's American consumers.
If one of the candidates, though, for president is on News Nation right now over my left shoulder, and yesterday he was doing it as well, giving a quote-unquote economic speech, and all it is everything is crap, don't you think that...
Exactly. And it's not just limited to one party,
okay,
because
then,
everybody's got an economic speech and a plan to make it better. I got news for you. Historically speaking, independent of politics, these are not the worst of times. You've got people who have their 401k accounts have really record balances.
Okay, but then why don't you think
jobs?
That the falling consumer confidence index is a result of the Trump campaign telling people things are terrible?
I think it's a result of both campaigns.
And lazy journalism, I'll add.
Well, okay, but the only thing I can think of that's changed sentiment so much is the fact that both campaigns. I mean, I understand. I don't know if she's spoken yet or not, but Kamala Harris is doing an economic speech today, too. The economy is the number one issue. And what I neglected to say is the Fed cut rates and inflation appears to be under control. That doesn't fix it. It doesn't push prices down. But we have incomes up and inflation under control and stocks at all-time highs and people have jobs, that kind of a thing. These are not the worst of times, no matter who you want to elect. Yes, people on fixed incomes are struggling, but inflation is coming down. So that gap is narrowing immeasurably. And yes, it's been too expensive to buy a house, but rents are coming down and rates are coming down, making homes more affordable. So the point is, it is not the end of the economic world. even though it's the one topic that both candidates want to talk about. And they can't talk about what they're going to do without saying it's horrible, but I will be the one to make it
better. Well, and that's why I think that index and the reporting of it sort of feeds on itself. And I don't think it is all that important outside of a political consideration.
The confidence index?
Yeah.
But the thing is, we have these benchmarks, manufacturing,
okay, but
imports,
those are empirical.
Exports.
But those are numbers. Those are units. Those are numbers.
Well, historically, fall in consumer confidence has, that's why I made the point I made. Historically, falling consumer confidence has meant consumers will cut back. They'll be afraid to go buy that house. They'll be afraid to go shopping or buy that car.
That's real.
That tends to lead to a recession. But as I said, we see people spending and credit card debt soaring, which is the subject of my most recent column. And at that point, you say to yourself, have we just changed the consumer? Worried, yes, but the reaction, which we typically expect when it falls, confidence falls, I'm going to hunker down. Honey, we're not going to go buy that. We're not going on that trip. I'm going to hunker down. Seems to have been met by, oh, well, the end of the world is coming. Let's go spend it now.
Four straight days, the indices hit record highs, and the business show on Fox News did not report it one day.
Are you serious?
And I think that's what I'm talking about here. Terry Savage is in our studio. By the way, Terry, among the text messages which have come in, John, Terry, the confidence level is down because of inflation. Hey, John Williams, I'm not confident about spending money right now until the elections are finished. It's inflation that really is driving people's attitude, don't you think?
Yes, but the interesting thing is inflation has been coming down, and the index was strong for the last couple of months. So I can pull up the last few months because I get that report and I save it every time. So the anomaly was, in August, as inflation has come down, consumer confidence has gone up. And inflation is down in the last month. So that drop in consumer confidence, I think you called it correctly. Everything you turn on is politicians saying, it's horrible, but I can fix it for you. And it calls people's attention to, gee, it really sounds like it's horrible.
And that's why I say, okay, and I know it's not going to be a news story if somebody says, hey, everybody, if you qualify it, if you say the economy is good, that's bias. That's not the way news gets reported. But you can say the markets are up or interest rates are down. But it just doesn't seem to me like, as things are going relatively well, that it's being communicated to people, especially in light of the fact that people think that, in fact, we're in a recession or that consumer confidence is low. I know that, but I mean, so where are the radio, TV, newspaper, website people out there saying that if America has a misperception of reality, it's our responsibility to help them understand the world?
John, that's a really great question.
I'm talking to the wind here. By the way, I just want to mention this. The major stock market indices closed at a record high for a fourth straight day, and for the second straight day, Larry Kudlow did not mention it during his Fox Business show. And that was just the one thing I was talking about. And Fox News isn't even what I'm talking about here. It's all of us. I think we've got to figure out ways to tell people good news without sounding like you're a propaganda piece.
I don't think it's even good news. I think it's about the reality. Said it at the beginning. Here's the reality. Interest rates are historically low. Unemployment's historically low. Inflation was up, but it's coming down. It's getting very close to the Fed's targets, under 3%. If you had said 15 years ago that we're going to have low inflation, with the stock market booming, to me, I never got scared at 7.5%, 8% mortgage rates because I told you I bought my first home with a 15% seller note, and I still own that. So the fact is, we've scared people, and relatively speaking, historically, I don't care who brought this to you, Democrats or Republicans, historically, we're in a very good place. Yes, people have always been squeezed. And yes, we had a couple-year period of inflation. And prices of some stuff that went up, not coming down. This right. morning, I said, I'm picking up the check at breakfast. And I figured, well, you know, what's this going to be, $35? $50? I mean, eggs
breakfast
and bacon.
Breakfast for how many people?
Two people. Huh. Coffee, eggs, and bacon. Oh, I had a scone. Oh, I forgot to take the extra piece of scone. I mean, it's stuff is very expensive. I'm not saying it isn't. But what I'm saying is, in terms of where we are and where we're headed right now, with or without interference from either of the candidates, we're in a relatively good place. We have not heard the word misery index mentioned once, despite all the discussion of what's wrong. The misery index was a combined inflation and unemployment rate. It doesn't exist right now because they're both so low.
Terry, personally, I find I'm in good shape financially, but my niece and their friends in their early 30s, some with college degrees, are having terrible times getting jobs above minimum wage. Also looking for jobs for months with very little luck. Not everyone is in finance or IT. Anyway, I even go into shock every time I go to the grocery store. And then I read about the huge profits the mega food companies are making. Everything needed to keep a car or a house running seems to cost exponentially more since COVID. These are some of the reasons consumers are feeling like things are going downhill.
Yes. Because we had inflation and it pushed everything up. If we still had 7 or 8% inflation, we'd all be screaming. We are living with the after effects.
It's cumulative.
Of the inflation we had. The price level has never gone down. I mean, when it goes down briefly, it means we're in a very deep recession. So I acknowledge all of that. But I mean, I acknowledge all of it. And that's why it's so much easier for the media to focus on the pain than on the comfort of where we are. I'm kind of embarrassed at this moment because it makes me sound like I don't understand the pain of young people just starting out.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Whenever was it written that 26 and 27-year-olds got six-figure jobs or got to buy a house right away? We've become a pretty entitled society. So it might be a little bit of a tough time. It's nowhere near as tough as it would be in a recession. And we are not in a recession.
We were talking about the consumer confidence index and how it's low, even though the markets have been having a good day, et cetera. Just a couple of email about that or text messages. 630 said the stock markets are up. The value of my house is higher than ever. Nobody talks about that. Unemployment's low. Interest rates are down. Inflation's going down. There's lots of good economic news out there. But 847 said, John and Terry, quit focusing on these statistics. I don't care what they show. What it comes down to is how much do you have left at the end of the month or how much they see going out. I know I'm spending more each month, and how much I'm getting for that spending on the same stuff is going down. We can't afford to eat out anymore. John, the inflation may be coming down. However, the inflation that has been baked in for the past 4 years is crippling, and wages have not kept pace. Everyone's purchasing power has been eroded. Terry said as much a little while ago. And hey, John and Terry. Okay, well, so that's just what we're getting.
This is what we're talking about in America.
That reinforces what you were saying. We have other questions, though. Hey, John and Terry, I found from Capital One's CreditWise that my Social Security number is on the dark web. What action should I take?
Well, let me tell you that everyone's Social Security is on the dark web. I bet you dollars to donuts that your Social Security is out there on the dark web.
Yeah.
So up at terrysavage.com, there's an evergreen article that has links in it. It says the article on the right where it says financial links. It says identity theft, do this. Everyone, all of you, should first of all get your credit report free through annualcreditreport.com. The link's in that article. You go to each of the three bureaus, read it. See if anybody has made inquiries, if there have been any attempts to open new accounts. And then while you're there, freeze your credit. Doesn't cost anything. It's easy to do. The one thing I would say is you have to create a PIN. Make sure you find a safe place to remember that PIN. Don't put that in your emails or something like that. But create a PIN, freeze your credit. You can lift it very easily if you're going to get a new credit card, if you're going to buy a car, if you're going to apply for a mortgage refi. But freeze your credit. And then I would check your credit score. Either your bank probably offers it free, Credit Karma offers it free, to see if there are any unexpected changes. But everybody's information is out there.
This listener says, John, can you ask Terry the following question? My husband and I are helping our 21-year-old purchase a used vehicle. Between all of us, we've got the money available to purchase the car with cash. But our thoughts are to finance the vehicle as co-signers. She has zero credit, and maybe this can help her build credit. What's the best choice?
It could be, but if you're a co-signer to the loan, the credit's probably going to be reported on your own credit. So I'm not sure that if you're signing the loan, her credit score is going to get the credit, the quote credit, for being making those on-time payments. For sure, you can get a much better deal. Used car financing is some of the most expensive financing out there. So for sure, if you can negotiate for a cash deal and to make sure you are getting a good deal, go to KBBKellyBlueBook.com and look at the make and model of the year and see what you should be paying for that mileage. It's a great way to teach her. But I think if she needs a car and you want to make this a gift to her, make it a gift. And then urge her to get a secured credit card. Go to creditcards.com. A secured credit card, if she has a deposit of $500 or $1,000, she puts in a savings account in the bank. They'll give her a Visa or MasterCard. She can use it on a regular basis, pay it back on time and in full every month. And that will do more to build her credit than anything else.
But if you have cash to buy a car, just excluding this story, but you'd rather keep the money.
You shouldn't rather. First of all, if you're scrounging every available bit, I mean, I guess there are people who have to have a car to get to work, and the only way they can do it is to borrow the money to buy it. We're not talking to that audience here. You just asked me the choice of cash or credit. And you always, always, always get a better deal. You can negotiate for
on the
cash,
price of the car.
On the
cash.
Price of the car for cash.
But
and second of all, the interest rates, even unless you go to maybe your credit union.
That's what I'm talking about.
On used cars, though, that you're going to pay an awful lot of interest. And they're going to build it in somehow to the price of the car. They're going to get you coming or going. So it's much easier to figure out what you should be paying for that year, that make and model of the car, and then actually pay the cash.
Yeah.
And don't forget about insurance, too.
You're not going to earn on that with that you're, money what
exactly.
You're going to pay
I mean, you're
in the loan.
Maybe making 2 or 3% in the bank, and if you couldn't afford to pay for cash, then maybe you don't have the car. I mean, these are multiple anxious angles of this question. But what I'm saying is, if she wanted to build her credit, getting a secured credit card,
do that
by a deposit,
but pay
use it. You spend $36 every month and pay it off.
I don't know where that's going, Pete, but I'll turn down this one. Maybe that'll help. My wife and I are both retired. Our stepson is going through a divorce, or my stepson, this letter says, is going through a divorce and wants to borrow $30,000 from our retirement fund.
Dong, dong, dong.
Is that a good idea?
No. First of all, it's going to destroy your marriage. Second of all, it's going to destroy your retirement. And third of all, it's going to destroy your son. So this is his problem. And he will not be there in 10 or 15 years when you really need this, when this makes a difference. You have to just say, we can't. There's penalties and taxes. It'll impact our Social Security payments. Honey, we can't do that. Would you like to live with us?
Mm.
Now, that'd be a nice offering.
331 said, please ask Terry if it would make sense to close a traditional IRA of $29,000, earning less than 1%, and open a CD at 5% with that.
No. Where is your IRA only earning 1%? Where have you been?
That's what it says, yeah.
Okay, so just go walk into that bank and say, I want to buy a CD inside my IRA earning 4.5% or 5%. And if they say we don't allow IRAs to buy those CDs, go to terrysavage.com. In the search box under columns, put the word rollover now, and you will get an instruction column on how to do a direct rollover. Roll it over to Fidelity or Vanguard if you don't want to invest. Put it in their government money market fund, and you'll be earning a lot more.
Remember, if you missed...
Don't end the IRA. I just want to make this very clear. Don't end the IRA. You'll pay ordinary income taxes and lose all future tax-deferred growth. Just get a better investment for inside your IRA.
Remember, if some of the things Terry says are going too quick for you, or you go, now, wait a minute, what happened? After the show, we'll post this whole conversation as a podcast. You can listen to it, share it with your family and friends. I have a friend with credit card debt and wants to tap into home equity credit card debt. They want to tap into their home equity. They owe $60,000 on the home that's worth about $600,000. What's your advice for them?
Well, this might be a good time to refinance a home, but the question is, how is your credit? Are they current with their payments, so their credit score is still good? Do they still have income, or are they older and retired? The least expensive way to pay down that credit card debt would be to tap into the home equity and pay it down.
They got $540,000 of equity in the home.
Exactly. The question is, what will it cost you, and do you have good credit to borrow against it? Look, I just wrote a column. It's up at terrysavage.com. Credit card balances increased at the end of the second quarter of July to $1.14 trillion, an all-time high. Bankrate reports that the average credit card rate in September 24 is 20.78%, but department store cards now charge as high as 34%. And at bankruptcywatch.com, the 2024 numbers are soaring. Chapter 7 filings increased nearly 20% year over year. So this is the moment. This is where I want to go at the very beginning when we were talking about, well, what's wrong with the economy? Are people just saying the heck with it? This is it. The end is nigh. I will spend. Look, this is the moment to get in charge, deal with your credit. So for that person, you've got equity. Sure, go tap your equity if you can.
312-981-7200 to call or text with Terry Savage. We got more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Chicago-based Medicare Advantage insurer has raised $140 million in new funding. Zing Health will use the funding to expand its integrated chronic special needs-focused plans to more beneficiaries. It also plans to invest in integrating its member experience with high-quality care providers. Zing Health provides managed care Medicare Advantage plans with supplemental benefits and access to care through a network of provider partners. Each member receives personalized care tailored to their health conditions and social needs through a mix of technology and value-based care delivery. New stats show the pandemic exodus from Chicago was not as bad as first thought. Cranes reports it was the largest outbound flight from Chicago in 5 years, but not as severe as experienced by other cities. It was worse in New York, Boston, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. The Brookings Institution analysis shows about 47,000 tax filers left the Chicago area in 2021 than those who arrived, a 64% jump from 2019. In San Francisco, that number was 274% higher, and in New York, it was 103% higher. Brookings says Chicago's losses appear to have been a continuation of slow departures rather than a large outbound surge. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And here's one from the Time Flies category.
Yeah, 2024 represents Grubhub's 20th anniversary.
Yeah, 20 years of Grubhub, Chicago's very own.
We were founded right here in Chicago by Matt Maloney and Mike Evans.
Dave Tovar of Grubhub says it didn't start out as what it is today, what it was meant to be. And I'll tell you how to get some free food after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Grubhub's humble beginnings 20 years ago.
They started with a very simple premise, which is to help restaurants digitize their menus, get them on the internet so that people wouldn't have to sift through all these paper menus and things like that. And could just go to one place, find the restaurant that they wanted to order from, and order directly to the restaurant.
Today, Grubhub is
a full service delivery company that can bring you your favorite meals from restaurants, but also your favorite convenience and grocery items from just about anyone out there right now. So it's been an exciting evolution.
Grubhub evolved into a $7 billion company and was bought out by a Dutch company in 2020. It is still based in Chicago's Loop with about 1,000 employees, and most of them will be celebrating the 20th birthday today with what is called Feastival.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic party down at Daly Plaza, so right next to City Hall, which is right across from our headquarters. And we're going to have about 20 of Chicago's most iconic restaurants that are going to be giving away free food to anybody who wants to come down.
You know, Dave, I believe you said the magic word, free.
Correct. It's free for anybody who wants to stop by. We're expecting a big crowd, so I'd get there early.
Daily Plaza today.
We will have lots of food for lots of people who want to show up.
Feastival, celebrating 20 years of Grubhub with 20 restaurants dishing up free food in Daily Plaza today from now until 1:30. On the food calendar, it's National Quesadilla Day and National Lobster Day. Hey, how about a lobster quesadilla? I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
All right, Terry Savage, ready to answer more questions?
Let's see what we can cram in the last
The Money Lady is here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can also find her at terrysavage.com. Wendy, you're on WGN. What's your question?
Hey, what is the difference between a T-bill and a CD?
Okay, a T-bill, a treasury bill, is an IOU directly from the United States government. We have a $30+ trillion national debt. So every week they borrow more money to repay old maturing debt. Those shorter term IOUs are 3 and 6 month treasury bills. You buy them at treasurydirect.gov. You don't know what the rate is. It's set at the auction and it reflects the global outlook for inflation and so forth and what people want to get for their money. Bank CDs typically are set to compete. Maybe sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, with T-bills. If you have the same degree of safety, you don't pay Illinois state taxes.
What is a CD?
It's a certificate of deposit
with
at
a bank.
A bank, right. So as long as you're under the $250,000 insured limit.
Who pays more, a CD or a T-bill?
It depends on what the bank wants to pay. Remember, John, about 2 years ago when I was showing everybody, there's at terrysavage.com, there's a permanent article, how to buy T-bills, because the banks were saying, yeah, people don't know that you could get a six-month T-bill for then 4.5%. We'll still be paying 3% on CDs. So people got wise to that because they
are
do.
Are CDs more liquid, though? Do you have quicker access to a CD?
You can break a CD, you'll pay a penalty. You can't get out of a T-bill until it comes up for maturity. And then if you haven't set an automatic renewal, the money drops back into your bank account.
So then
account.
What's the better? Whatever
the higher
number is?
Wherever you get the higher rate is. As long as you're willing to tie it up for 6 months, yes, either.
I hope that helps, Wendy.
Same
safety. Is that good information, Wendy?
Helped a lot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for that. I don't think we have time to get into any more complicated issues. We've got just about a minute left. Actually, we've got 2 minutes left. Let's try and answer Steve's call, too. Steve, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. What can we do for you, Steve?
Thank you, John. Good morning, Terry. I've got a significant amount of my portfolio with Fidelity, and because they don't like stocks, they suggest it's a managed account. They put it all in ETFs. Well, this year, because it's been a bull market, I've done great. My fear is, though, if it becomes a bear market based on election or world crisis, I could equally lose everything as fast. What can I do to protect myself against these ETFs in a bear market?
Is this inside an IRA account or just a regular trading account?
No, it's in an IRA.
Okay, so you don't have any tax consequences. So for everybody who wonders what's an ETF, it's an exchange-traded fund, a basket of stocks, which gives you a little bit of diversification.
It's like
but
a mutual
you're right.
fund in
it's
a
It's sort
sector.
Of like a mutual fund, only you, but it's traded on an exchange. So the point is, though, you're absolutely right. The bigger they come, the harder they fall. They will go down faster than they come up if the market turns around. I don't know what stage of life you're at, but if it's making you uncomfortable, you can call and say, I have 100% in these ETFs. Sell 25% right now. We're at all-time highs. I might have said this to you 3 weeks ago. We were at all-time highs that were lower than they are now. But the point is, there's an old savage truth. Sell down to the sleeping point. So there is nothing that keeps you from saying, I'm getting older, I'm closer to retirement. You can call your Fidelity management person because they've put you with an advisor who's charging a fee and say, it's my IRA. Sell 25%. Put it in the money market fund. I'll forgo any more gains on the upside. It'll make me feel better that I've taken some profits and leave it inside your IRA.
Do you think that's
a
pretty good strategy right now?
I think that I would have said that 3 months ago. I've been saying it for a while. The baby boom generation has a massive investment in 401ks and IRAs.
Take some profits.
Set some of those profits aside in a money market. Don't take it out and pay taxes. It will let you sleep at night. Over the long run, yeah, the market may go higher, but it's terrible when you're riding out a bear market.
You got questions for Terry Savage at terrysavage.com. She's the money lady. Also the author of Social Security Horror Stories, Protect Yourself from the System and Avoid Clawbacks.